Welcome to episode 19 of Comically Exposed, the fabulous podcast that talks about OCD and breaking into comedy. My name is Gabby, and my fabulous, amazing, so talented co-host is
Heather.
Fabulous. And this is the second episode of our interview with Maeve Forty, who is also an immensely talented, hilarious, incredible human being. So let's get right into it. Here we go. That actually brings me to, so Maeve, like, what do you, like, do you do exposure therapy for OCD, or do you, like, and also you don't have to talk about it at all.
Yeah.
You know, but like, what's working for you? What have you tried? What do you hate? What's up?
Well, I honestly haven't really tried that many therapies for OCD, because what I've been more focused on is, and I didn't even bring this up at all, but since my mom died, I was dealing mostly with PTSD and other issues related to trauma. So, and again, like we said, a lot of, it's always tough for me to really visualize in my head, because a lot of these different illnesses overlap in some ways, which is why I feel like I just kept getting new diagnoses. And at one point they were like, maybe it's, you know, borderline personality disorder, or maybe it's just PTSD. Like, there's a lot of overlap, I guess, supposedly. So, you know, that was very confusing. But where I'm at now is working on this trauma therapy, and it's, I'm doing EMDR. If you've heard of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I bought the paddles.
Oh.
Go. Yeah. And also a professional grade, like the therapy book to do it with, and then never did it for myself.
Of course, right.
Yep. Oh. But did it. Yeah. But I did do it, you know, professionally, and it was so helpful. And then, yeah, just want to say it's in my shame closet.
Oh, okay.
Please continue. How is EMDR working for you?
So I took like a little break from it. It can be really intense if you're doing it consistently, like every week. It's just a lot. And, you know, so I find it's hard. It's one of those things where I'm like, I can't do this right now or for the next 6 months, and then I'll pick it back up, you know, with my therapist. But it was really helpful with the recurring thoughts and memories. I felt like that was where it was most effective, helped me. Kind of the point is reprocessing those memories, and so they're less painful or triggering. But it also works with other things. You know, we've done it with pain, and, you know, because I can go on forever about all these different things. But I started dealing with a lot of chronic illness after my mom died.
Oh, yeah,
there are legitimate things happening in my body, but most likely it's from trauma. So. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of interesting. You can apply that therapy to a lot of different things, even things that have just happened in your childhood or like feelings that you have. So it kind of works for a lot of stuff. But now I'm looking to focus more on the OCD and the anxiety, because that's where I feel like I'm struggling now. Now that I have processed some of those memories, and now it's like the anxiety and those obsessive thoughts are more at the forefront. Where before it was just like general numbness and retreating from life and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's so real. I'm sorry. I too went through major grief with losing my father a few years ago. And oddly enough, that's right before he passed. I was diagnosed formally with OCD. So that was kind of a weird thing to happen. And it was, his death was also very traumatic.
I'm sorry to hear that. Traumatic death especially is, I mean, and losing anyone in any way is difficult, but I feel like there's a different layer there when it's traumatic, because my mom too, it was sudden in an accident. So it's, you know, it just really changes how you're able to process that.
I feel you on this one because for me, I had, and I don't know, like my therapist wouldn't confirm, which is another thing he does to me sometimes, which I think is hilarious for anybody else but me. is that I was actually intertwining some of my OCD thoughts. Because, yes, I do think of when I think of death, I do think of like everybody's death. But sometimes when it comes to like my breathing situation, it's whatever. But since I know things and have seen things, that some of it got intertwined with my intrusive thoughts, which was extremely hard. And some things that have come because I wasn't there when it happened, that I had some imagination, I guess that's as far as I'm going to take that, because I am not going to talk about the actual event. I think with, I don't know, I also did group therapy for grieving, and that was incredibly supportive, which I'm glad that you did and have gone through. And I'm glad that, I mean, I'm going to explore more about EMDR because I'm curious now, but I was also going to offer if like, I don't know, I'm not a doctor. Maybe I'm going to stop this and not edit this part out.
Can't wait.
I know what's coming. I know, but I was going to say acceptance commitment therapy was really helpful for me. And there's a lot of tools in it. It's not made for OCD, but it started working with OCD patients, and it helps before doing ERP, because what it does is it kind of trains you for the response prevention part. And so your mind is a little bit more ready. Like, for example, my doctor jumped right into ERP with me and was sort of effective. And then he backed out and then started doing compassion, like self-compassion and ACT with me. And I've taken a class. So I'm just saying, like, person who grieved to another person who grieved to major things. Yeah, it might be a way to go gently.
Yeah, thank you.
No, into that kind of, yeah.
That's very helpful.
I can cut this part out because I'm like, I'm not trying to diagnose you or
anything. No, that's really helpful.
But I just want to be helpful.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is really helpful. And, you know, I know it's a super difficult thing to talk about, but I really relate to everything you were saying about the way that the death affected you. And I don't obviously know exactly what happened to you, but I had a similar situation where I wasn't there. I wasn't, and then I felt like there was a lot of unresolved things afterwards, because I wasn't able to, I was 20 years old. So I was a little like young compared to the rest of my family, where they kind of didn't want me to be as involved, which I wanted to be. So, you know, real lack of control, which I think made me spiral afterwards in terms of what I could control. So,
oh, yeah, of course.
Definitely the imagining, that was huge, because I wasn't able to like see her body and all these things. And which I know later can really actually impact your ability to grieve if you're not able to do those things. There were accident photos, and like, this is so kind of gory, but I became obsessed with looking at them, because I just really wanted to, I don't know what the goal was there. There wasn't one, but I just needed to know every single detail, like needed to make it real for myself. So
yeah,
I became very obsessive with that, and like reconstructing the accident in my mind, and like exactly how fast was this car going and this car, you know, just constant.
Yeah. I had the same thing of rethinking things. So yeah. Ooh, sorry.
No.
Thank you for listening to this. Yeah. This is kind of nice to kind of bring it out.
Yeah.
But, I was going to say thank you to both of you for sharing.
Yeah. You're like, where do I move this?
here comes the jokes. No, just kidding. I was going to say, it sounds like both of you were really trying to process a very traumatic thing so that you could wrap your head around something so impossible to conceive. Yeah. And on top of that, I think like OCD, especially with the repetition and replaying things, I think that is definitely, you know, perhaps part of trying to control what happened in some way, you know?
Yeah. Mine was more about like preventative. Like, how could I like not have had this happen?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. And also research is a big one for me when it comes to OCD stuff, which can get kind of intense. I can lose myself in research. But which is funny because some of my things of OCD, it sounds helpful. There's like the helpful version and there's the disordered version. And when it becomes disordered, it's not helpful at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever have that? Like when you're like, because if you, you're still exploring what your compulsions are and understanding your, I mean, you're really understanding your intrusive thoughts. At least this is what I understood. But you're still trying to figure out what your compulsions are. Do you do like things like ruminate or research or?
Yes, definitely ruminate. And that's probably the main thing, which I think initially I just lumped into the intrusive thoughts. Like I didn't separate that as a separate act.
Me too. Yeah. I had that same problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why for me, I was like, oh no, I only have the, you know, the obsessions. Because I was expecting the compulsions to be like this big thing where I'm going to, you know, there's something that I'm going to like be doing it. Whereas it's really not like that. So not for me. So yes, to answer your question, it's very much the rumination. I think when I ruminate on something, it kind of causes me to, a lot of time that triggers a panic attack. And then it's like a cycle. Mm. And it can be something very small that triggers it. Usually it's something I've noticed with other people, like something that involves another person. If there's an argument or like there's something that happened, and usually when people get mad at me, that is when I'll ruminate and then I'll have a panic attack and then I'll go back to ruminating for like the next 7 years about it. And sometimes it just, you know, something will bring it back up and I'll just start the whole process over again.
Yeah, that sounds horrible. I'm so sorry. I totally feel you on that one because I've been in the same boat.
Yeah.
It's not fun at all. How about you, Gabby? Do you do that too?
Oh yeah. All right. Again, I was like,
that was a joke. Out of my
I don't have a very developed sense of humor, so it takes me a minute.
No, you do. No.
1,000%. It's like, oh man, even if I perceive somebody as being mad at me or slightly annoyed or, you know, whatever it is, it's like, well, let's just replay that one more time. Like 7 more times.
Yeah.
And then 12 more times. And then a million more times. Yeah.
And then three hours passes.
And I could have been scrolling on Instagram and that honestly would have been more productive.
Yeah. This is where the line between OCD and ADHD for me blurs, because at least what I have learned about ADHD is the really high amount of rejection sensitivity.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's something I was always dealt with since I was a kid, just very, very, very sensitive to any sort of rejection. And that's when I would have those ruminations. And I guess it's, you know, a lot of people with ADHD struggle with that. Like that's where a lot of their anxieties come from, is perceived abandonment or rejection or, yeah.
Yeah, 1,000%. And also like, just for me, total bewilderment as to what the social rules are in a situation, like being in school as a young kid or whatever, and then like not picking up on something and then being called weird or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You too.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Or even now I'm like, did I just say something that's not normal, or, you know, and then
Yeah. So then you replay it because you're trying to learn the rule.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. Like, what was it? What was the thing that I said so I can make sure I don't say that again?
Yes.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Do you also, Maeve, do you have a bit of, are you hyper attuned to everything that's happening in a situation?
Yes.
A little hyper aware?
Yes. Definitely. Hyper vigilant about everything, and especially about other people. Like always reading everyone and every, you know, I think that's why I get extra sensitive about things, that because I read into them usually. I'll make assumptions about whatever. And I think that
maybe I have ADHD.
Look, it's sounding, it's like adding up here.
Uh-huh. I mean, Maeve and I are making it sound so cool.
It's so
that
cool.
I get what you want to do on this
book. Do you want to join the club? Yeah.
But the deadline has passed, Heather, so sorry.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. We can get you in on something else, you know, like maybe some manic behaviors or something, but unfortunately.
Oh my God.
Yeah, the application process is closed. So. Yeah, the hyper-attentiveness. And then because, okay, this is like as a young person with ADHD, it was like, all right, I have some impulsivity a little bit, but there's also daydreaming that tends to be how girls, you know, like show their ADHD-ness. And so then I'll miss a social cue and then I'm called weird or and then I'm like, okay, well, then I really need to pay attention to make sure I don't do that again because I hated being called weird, right? The rejection sensitivity. Mm. And then I feel like the OCD steps up to the plate and is like, listen, you want to control a situation? Let me tell you how we're going to do this. First of all, we're going to replay this situation a bajillion more times so that we've extracted every possible bit of information from it so that it does not happen again in your lifetime. And on top of that, I'm just going to tell you, if you think about a purple dragon for like, I don't know, 18 hours a day, nothing bad is going to happen to you. I'm just going to throw that in as a bonus as your OCD right now. And then it just kind of spirals from there.
Yeah. That's, I feel like I used to get in trouble sometimes whenever I wouldn't, from this lack of focusing or daydreaming or whatever. That was always when I got in trouble.
Yes.
And then that was what caused the, you know, then I got really paranoid and upset about getting in trouble. And then I would, you know, so it just, it leads to a cycle. But I always felt like or even if it wasn't me getting in trouble, it was me embarrassing myself, like you said. It was always the root of it was always me not paying attention, not focusing or missing something.
Yes, totally. Which I wonder, either did school just always come easily to you or was school another way where you got to show that like you could be functional? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like it was school was easy for me where I just, I mean, I would always just teach myself stuff. Like I can never pay attention. That's why there were certain classes, and this didn't happen until college, where I realized my methods were not going to work here.
Yes. Yes. 1,000%.
And I was like,
yes.
Reminder to never do this again. Because I would take, I mean, sometimes I would, I mean, I took this one class. It was like a logic class. Hated it. Misery. I just, because it was just required too much of me on a day to day. And I function well in those sorts of classes. Like I have to just learn it later, or I have to write a paper later. Like there has to be something like that. And yeah, but still I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, by the grace of God, I did fine. I don't know. Cause I remember learning it all at the last minute, but there were some times where this was not like I took a coding class. No, absolutely. No, I can't do coding because you can't get away with this sort of shit. In a coding class, and I was miserable. You have to actually be paying attention and like learning as you go. No, I can't do that.
No. And okay, I just want to say, I also tried to teach myself code by doing, like, I took a couple of classes. I did a couple of online classes, but some of the ones in person, it was like the combination of so much repetition, which makes my brain turn off and pay attention to anything else. And then all of a sudden, the introduction of new information in a quick way that I would lose because I wasn't paying attention in that moment.
Yep.
And then I would be so far behind and so perplexed by the whole thing and embarrassed to raise my hand because I knew it was because of me that I stopped paying attention.
Mm, yes. Yeah. And I felt this way also in econ. Hated econ. First of all, it was a 600 person lecture hall. Immediately
I
just didn't. I didn't even go most of the time. I was like, fuck that. I mean,
yeah.
It's not, I can't learn in that sort of environment. And then I'd be relying on, and the guy, I mean, the person teaching it was like, I mean, monotone. He would use the worst examples. Couldn't even try to make it interesting. And so I'm left with the book, which I don't know. I don't understand. And then I was just, it was the same nightmare over and over again. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't get it. I don't, it was like the first, that was the first time that I was like, oh my God, I can't, I'm struggling to teach myself this material.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there were just certain things. And then I gave up. And then I started getting panic attacks when I would take exams because of this. I would be like, I don't, I would just would start having panic attack the second it started. I was able to breathe my way out of it, but I would lose like 10 minutes because I just have to sit there. Like I would try putting my pencil to the paper and it would like, I couldn't write because I was just completely panicking. So I developed that issue in the middle of college. So after that, I was like, I'm never taking another exam again. And I didn't because I was like, no thanks. Clearly we don't work well together, but a paper where I'm in control. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. Yeah. That's like the interesting thing about learning in schools, even in college, higher education, like there is this like very singular approach, but everybody comes at it from different angles, you know?
Yeah.
Like I do well when I'm learning in the process. I accidentally turned my mic off there. When I'm actually doing something,
yeah,
not
yeah,
just being
kinesthetic learner,
at. Yeah, yeah, and being talked at is always like,
like... okay. So I did my senior thesis a little bit on this. It was also mainly to get women to stay in STEM throughout college, but 80% of people can learn auditorily alone. 90% of people can learn visually, and 100% can learn kinesthetically. Mm. And yet we only teach auditorily in school. Wow. And it makes, like, sometimes you'll get a teacher who's a little more visual. Sometimes you'll get one who's like more project based. You can do like by doing, but it frustrates the shit out of me.
Yep.
Because I'm like, well, we're just leaving people to feel stupid when truly what's happening is the system is failing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I always.
And that's why I'm a math and science tutor.
Nice. I always felt this way in school. Like, I didn't feel stupid because I felt like, well, I'm still doing fine. But I felt like school's not meant for me, which is why I developed a hatred of school because it just didn't feel like it was my style of learning. Yeah. And again, until I got to some really difficult classes and situations, me teaching myself the thing at the last hour was working out and it was enough.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I realized like I would always play these games and this leads to imposter syndrome and you feeling like, oh, am I just a fraud and no one has caught on yet? And maybe I was because, you know, at some points it did catch up to me, but I would just like try to do the bare minimum. We have to write a paper. I'm like, well, what if I do a project instead? And it's like a self, you know, it's just going to be me learning about myself. And like, I would always try to cut corners and offer to do something that was not, you know, not reading the book, or instead of writing my senior thesis, I did like an experiential project, any way to get out of doing the thing that required a lot of planning and a lot of steps.
Yes.
And because I hated that, if I could just do it my own way. So sounds like you guys relate to that. Yes.
That 1,000%.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do want to correct you and say that wasn't you cutting corners. Mm-mm. That was you modifying a system that wasn't made for you so that it worked for you.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That's brilliant right there. Truly.
Okay, I like that. I like that better.
Yeah.
In my way.
I was like, that's not cutting corners. Well, that's you're literally reinventing
but
it.
You're taught, you're taught that you are cutting corners.
Yes.
If you're not doing it
if
the
you
way.
Don't,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're not doing it the incredibly boring, by rote, regurgitating dates and numbers information way.
Oh my God.
Which is like, it's like standardized testing. It's like,
oh my God. I just had this conversation with somebody the other day about how much I hated standardized testing. And again, I don't know. Sometimes I would do well, sometimes I wouldn't, but I'd never studied. I couldn't study for the stupid thing. I just was like, it feels like And that was lazy. You don't want to study for the SAT. You're lazy.
Oh, love yep. that I've heard self-criticism.
That one. Yeah. I just couldn't.
That was one of my faves, too. Yeah.
And I don't know. I couldn't get myself to sit down. Because you're learning how to, you're not learning the material. You already maybe know most of that stuff. You have to learn how to take the test. I don't want to do that.
Yes.
I just don't want to do that.
Yes. This is like my least favorite thing to tutor is the ACT and the SAT because they're like, well, I think I need test taking strategies. And I'm like, cool. I will give you the name and number of other tutors because I like when I would try to study or even take those tests, I would spend 20 minutes on one stupid problem because I had to know what the answer was. And then I would run out of time for the rest of it. And there's no. Like studying for a test seems so stupid. Studying to figure out how they word things, to figure out their tricks, to blah, blah, blah. My brain just keeps screaming, how is this useful in the real world? And the answer is, it's fucking not.
That just seems like such a waste of time to me. Instead of, I don't know, I'm not saying I have a way to test people better on what they actually know, but this just seems like, first of all, you needed to dedicate a lot of time to learn how to take it and do well. And I didn't have the time. I mean, I was like trying to do a million other things.
You were literally mm-hmm. trying to teach yourself the information from all of the classes that you had just sat through.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. You were doing school times two.
Yeah.
This is like when because I specialize in neurodiverse students. They're like my favorite because I'm like, yeah, I get it. But when they won't use their accommodations for like testing, they won't do time and a half. They won't go to a quiet place. They won't, you know, like wear headphones when they're allowed to wear headphones during the test, like whatever it is. And then I'll say, why didn't you do it? And they'll say, because basically what they say is, I want to be normal. I don't want to have to need these things. And I feel like I'm cheating. I feel like I'm lazy. I feel like I'm gaming the system in some way. And then my metaphor is always the same, which is like, dude, you're trying to play baseball with both your hands tied behind your back. And let me tell you, everybody else is using both hands to pick up the stupid bat to hit the stupid ball and then to catch it in a glove. So for you to just be out here playing with just your mouth and trying to, I don't know, hold a bat and hold yourself to the same standards. Like, I get where you're coming from, but it's stupid. Stop doing that. Use your accommodations. Pep talk by Gabby.
Yep. And that's, you know, I never had any of those accommodations, again, because of the whole thing we were talking about. Like, I knew people who did have them. People who were diagnosed with ADHD earlier. And I did not relate to them at all. And so that's why mm-hmm. that the lack of, what am I trying to say? Like the fact that we don't really meet people where they are and see how they fit into this criteria. We just like, everybody has to be the same. I feel like you miss a lot of people that could benefit from these sorts of things. And that's how I always absolutely. Felt.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you totally remove so much creativity from these very like uptight fields like economics, like mm-hmm. any of the hard sciences. Mm-hmm. You truly like by not allowing like I thank God had an awesome quantum mechanics professor, the second quantum mechanics class, because the first one was taught by a string theorist and nobody understood a word he was saying, but they all pretended like they did because they were assholes. But the second one, I used to cry during class quietly looking out the window. And I remember he like called me out at one point and was like, am I boring you? Like whatever. And I couldn't even bring myself to tell him like, I don't understand a fucking thing that is happening during class. And I have to go home and study for 5 hours a night just to piece together some of what we discussed in class. But thank God for the final project, he allowed us to do anything creative. So I wrote a children's book on a detective who like finds a simple harmonic oscillator or something. I don't even remember at this point. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I got an A in the class. But like truly, the rest of my physics professors did not allow anything close to that. So I barely squeaked by. And I'm like, what the shit, man? Because it would be very beneficial if physics, economics, math, all of these things had creative thinkers at the end of it. But if you can't fit into that narrow this step, then the next step, then the next step, then the next step, linear, then, you know, you either feel stupid, you feel an imposter, you drop out because, you know, you get bad grades, like whatever it is. It's mm-hmm. As opposed to what you were saying before, which is, how do these people add to it?
Yeah.
Right? What do these people have to bring to the table? You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So we've fixed education today. And that wow, good for was us. The point of the puck. Yeah. High fives all around.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to ask you, Maeve, do you have, because one of my main compulsions because of like the pure OCD, the intrusive thoughts, is avoidance. Do you ever experience avoidance as a compulsion?
Can you tell me more about like how that works? I've never even thought of it. I mean, it sounds like something I probably do, but like avoiding.
Oh my God.
Yeah, tell me.
No, as soon as you said that, all thoughts of it left my brain. I can't think of a fucking example.
You're now avoiding all the thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. My brain is like, never mind. Do a jazz dance.
Because in my brain, when you said avoidance, I'm thinking more of it in terms of an ADHD context, like avoiding, you know, responsibility kind of because it's overwhelming to you. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like from the compulsion standpoint.
I take it back. Yeah, I literally, my brain is so blank right now.
It sounds like you're avoiding thinking about it. Like,
well, no, I'm an imposter. I don't have avoidance. I just wanted to sound cool. Oh,
well, okay. Well, I really want to know what it is now, but let me tell you, I pulled up the Y box because I couldn't remember most of these things, but something that I do that I did not know this was a compulsion is the need to tell, ask, or confess. I don't know if this is relatable, but that is like, that alone like sometimes takes over my life because I feel like it's tied to not, a lot of my obsessions are about, like I told you this, not feeling like a good person or like, am I a good person? Is this the right thing to do? Well, is there something wrong with me? Like whatever. And then that leads to this, like checking in with people, making sure I get validation from like everybody. Even if I don't even want their validation, it's just like this need. Mm. Anyways, that's not about avoidance, but that is something that I feel like I had no idea that was related to OCD, but it's something that I do on a daily basis with everybody.
It's similar to researching because it's seeking reassurance.
Yes. Reddit I have a love-hate relationship with it because I will go, will look for people to validate exactly how I'm feeling on there and then just start scrolling for hours. So yes, it's good and it's also really bad.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's where you, I mean, that's the same thing with researching. Like it's like that fine line. Is it, am I really curious? Like this is the question I now ask myself. Am I really curious about the subject or am I trying to confirm like something? And if I'm trying to confirm something, then I'm like going, okay, then I ask the question, like a little question, and I go, do I need to confirm this right now? And then I just kind of let it go. And usually this is like lately, because I've been through a lot of other therapies, but lately it's been kind of like evaporating. But I can feel like when I feel like something is becoming disordered, like I'm looking up way too much stuff.
Really?
And it's, you know, and the other thing, the thing for me is that I'll start to notice that I'll look up the same things over and over again.
Yes.
So that's another hint.
Wow. Okay.
That there could be something. Like if you're looking for the same question and maybe in a different variety, then you're like, okay, this might be OCD. But it's not easy. It's not easy. You fall into that hole. Compulsions are hard. Well, because you get a high from it, right? You get a good feeling.
That's what I was going to say. It's like it makes me feel so much better once I look all this stuff up, or I call whoever, and
But then that's the part of the cycle. It makes you feel bad too at the end.
And then I keep doing it again. Okay. Yes. That's all right.
Yeah. That's a compulsion.
Dude, maybe you might have OCD. Yeah.
I like when my therapist tells me that too. When I try to convince him, like, I'm like, I don't have OCD. Like, I don't have enough OCD. Like, and he'll ask me a few questions based off of what we just discussed. And he goes, you have OCD.
I know. Okay. I have that too.
Wait, I'm so curious. Before you mentioned something about how your therapist often will confirm something. Okay, I don't know if this is what you mean, but I have an issue with my therapist. And maybe this is good, maybe it's bad. My psychiatrist too. They'll be like, and the problem is they're the ones introducing this idea. They're like, well, you know, BPD, like borderline is this and that and that. But I'm not, like, it's not important that we diagnose. It's not important that we put a label. I'm like, well, what the fuck? You're the one bringing shit up. And now I would like to know. Because, and be like, let's see how, but again, this overlaps with ADHD and OCD. I'm like, well, which one do I have? Or do I just have everything? Yeah. I'd really like, and they really hate to. And then one time she was like, yes, you're basically said, I think you are on the autism spectrum. And I'm like, okay. And then she's like, you should get like a test. You should do that whole test. Like, I forget what they call it. It's a neuropsych evaluation. Because she said, because again, I don't want to say for sure. I'm like, so I'm going to go spend $4,000 for someone to tell me that I'm mentally ill or autistic or both or whatever. And like, I already basically know that. Like, why? Why can't you just tell me?
Yeah. The labels thing is so interesting. I mean, I don't want to take away it because I also feel like, it is the therapist not wanting to give reassurance,
yes,
which is a huge damn thing. But also, I'm with you, Maeve. It's like, then why did you bring it up in the first place? Because I wasn't thinking about it, and now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, now it's in my head. Now it's part of your research cycle.
Exactly. It's part of your PhD that you're getting to nowhere. But I also the thing is, like, I did have a really good OCD therapist for a while, who was like, listen, most of these diagnoses, like most of the DCSM, wait, no, is that right?
DSM.
Thank you. And that is the big book of all the mentals, I think, is the technical term for it. But in there, like she was saying, it gets revised, you know, every couple of years or something like that, because one, there's new information, and two, there are so many diagnoses have the same symptoms, right? Like so many things from ADHD can also show up as OCD, can also show up as BPD, can also show up as choose your acronym, right?
Yeah.
And then she was like, also most of these things are comorbid. They exist at the exact same time, which is why, like, if you're anxious, more than likely you're depressed, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have ADHD, the odds that you are depressed and have anxiety, it's like the Venn diagram is one circle. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then on top of that, like OCD, and then on top of that, blah, 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 blah. And so she was like, so the thing is, labels are helpful. Like a diagnosis is helpful if it introduces like a new modality of therapy that you can explore to see if it's helpful for you. But if you're just collecting, you know, all of these diagnoses, then it's like... Again, it's like I got a passport full of them and nobody wants to look at it at the party. I'm showing all of them. Also, it's interesting that you got the BPD. I also got the BPD diagnosis by a therapist who then did not tell me that that's what she had diagnosed me with.
Oh.
There was also a language problem. And when I talked to my other therapist about it, she was like, you do not have that diagnosis. So I went back to the original one. Oh, it was my psychiatrist who had written it down in my file. And because I'm a researcher, I read my file.
Yes.
And then, so I went back to her and I was like, hey, you know, I've talked to other people that are professionals that do not think I have BPD. And she said, oh yeah, I agree with that. You got better. And I was like, no, personality disorders are not things that you get better from. And certainly not in a year. Like, what are you talking about? And it was just, you know, it was a misdiagnosis that ended up in my file that she's since rescinded. And I'm just like, does that mean something? Like the fact that it's still in there, but rescinded, is that like, are people going to treat me differently in the medical profession because of that? You know, it's like intrusive thought.
Well, but it's a true thought, right?
Yeah.
Because in the medical field, if somebody reads that, they would definitely treat you differently.
Yeah.
I mean, not that they should at all.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
That's some
problem. There's a lot of stigma with that one. And that's why,
yes,
but, and this is why, like, with the BPD thing, it a lot of times they don't want to diagnose you, or I guess, you know, sometimes they'll do it just willy-nilly. And I have heard that. I had somebody once who was like, well, what I'm going to say to insurance is a lot more serious than what I'm going to tell you. I'm like, what are you saying to insurance? Like, what are you talking about? What are you going to, what's happening here? What are you going to tell them? I'm what?
Oh.
Like, what's happening? Serious. But it's just anxiety.
That's horrifying.
I'm like, whoa. Like, what? But well, I mentioned this earlier that there's almost no, BPD and CPTSD, complex PTSD, are almost indistinguishable. CPTSD isn't even in the DSM, but now it's, you know about it. It's like, but the symptoms are almost exactly the same. But one is a personality disorder and one is PTSD. So like even something as serious, which has a lot of stigma as a personality disorder, could really be just, so that's why a lot of the time my psychiatrist and therapist will say, well, you fit the criteria for this illness, but I'm not going to diagnose you with it, which I think is interesting. It always leaves me with more questions.
Yes, but 1,000%.
I'm like, so what's the point of any of this shit? Like, you don't even, it doesn't matter. But I guess what you said is, you know, if it helps with a new, if it introduces a new treatment, then that's the point, I guess.
Yeah. So I interchange therapist with psychiatrist. I see a psychiatrist. He likes to not reassure me about things because one of my fun things that I do is that I think I have other things. You know, like, because, you know, I think I've mentioned this in a while ago. I thought I had autism for a long time. Still do every now and then. It's an intrusive thought. It's not like a super negative thought. It's just more of a confirmation thought.
Yes.
You know, and needing to know, like, kind of like what you were saying, like needing to know the definition, needing to know this, needing to know exactly what this is. It's just like me saying, oh, I might have ADHD, you know, but then I know that when I go through the symptoms, some of the symptoms are actually from OCD.
Well,
and they just present similar to ADHD.
Exactly.
And so, yeah.
And ADHD and autism as well, a lot of overlap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but there's like a whole, what do they call it? It's like ADHD or something like that.
Yeah.
ADHD.
This is what my therapist said to me. And I did not introduce the idea of autism, which I don't care because I know there's such a huge spectrum. Like, I mean, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, yes, you know, I think we're talking about ADHD. And she said, you're neurodiverse for sure. And you're somewhere on the spectrum. I'm like, what, you know, what is this? What is the significance of this? You know? And apparently, she couldn't even distinguish between whether it would be ADHD or ADHD or autism. Or, I mean, it's a lot of the time it just seems like figuring out exactly what it is, which probably isn't even possible, is not helpful in certain cases.
Yeah. It's, I think what this is really telling us is that no matter what our diagnosis is, it's just, you know, how we challenge ourselves to create the life that we want.
Yeah.
You know, like at first I used to go like be normal.
Yep.
Like yeah. My goal always is like to be normal. And I'm like, but then I kind of thought about it and I was like, but I don't want to be normal.
Yeah.
You know, like I, whatever normal is, you know, if it even exists.
Yeah.
And I think at the end, it's more about creating the life that suits us, you know, where we thrive. That's what's most important, unless there is something that needs to be helped with. Like, for example, if somebody did have autism and it did affect their daily life to function and take care of themselves, which again, you know, on the extreme side of the spectrum, you know, that's a big deal. If somebody has major depressive episode, you know, that's something that's really important. But then I'm not trying to undermine like our plight in lives, but it's just like, it's almost like I have to convince myself, like maybe I don't need to know like some things, you know, like be okay with that kind of
with like the not unknown. Knowing.
Yeah. With the unknown on something, you know.
That's very exposure for OCD. Just being okay with the unknown.
I hate it.
You might have OCD.
Yeah, I might have OCD.
Well, I think that's really what happens when you go to the therapist and you're like, well, what is it? I have these problems. And that's why they don't want to, like you said, reinforce that. But
yeah.
Ooh. It's annoying. But I think, so we've fixed psychiatry and therapy as well. Nailed it.
We're fixing all the problems today.
Dude, I think next up is Israel Palestine or oh my gosh, look at that. We have to go. We ran out of time. Could have fixed it, but that's the end of the podcast.
Didn't have time. Looked up avoidance.
Oh, what is it?
Oh.
So from the government, U.S. government, NIH website, there's a lot of like NCBI, NLM, NIH.
Oh, yeah.
That just blew my brain.
That website. It's one of my most visited tabs.
It says avoidance behaviors are often prominent feature in OCD. As patients attempt to avoid situations and stimuli that provoke obsessions, distress, and time-consuming rituals.
Which also, can be like ADHD, but it's like, job search, I have to do all these other things, but I have so many intrusive thoughts about the job search that I'm like, what if I just stayed in my terrible job instead?
Yeah.
And didn't do the thing that's hard.
Yeah. Avoidance also is a symptom of PTSD, or it's one of the behaviors that a lot of people do. So I feel like they're all probably related.
To avoid those triggers.
Exactly. I have one more question for you guys, because I I know one part of what am I trying to say, certain behaviors like skin picking or like hair pulling or those things can be part of OCD. I'm curious if you guys have any experience with this, because I didn't know this. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm sorry. Are you talking about trichotillomania?
Oh, yes. Hair pulling. And I know there are others. I don't do that specifically, but skin picking and like nail biting, which a lot of people do. And I remember when I was younger, and I just could not stop, still can't stop. But when I was looking into it, it was talked about as something, as an OCD behavior, which I think is interesting.
It's a compulsion.
I
have the hair pulling one. It's interesting because it's like the thick hairs that are real kinky because I have curly hair. Those have to go, but also the thin ones that are kind of straight, those also have to go.
So they all have to go.
So. Right. Basically, it's a everything must go fire sale. Sorry, Heather, what were you going to say?
No. I was just going to say, like, I haven't been officially like diagnosed or whatever, but I do, like, when I'm in a stressful situation, pick my face a little bit or my arms. And I didn't realize I was doing it until I started exposures and started realizing, I do this, but I don't do it to a degree that's more severe than my other compulsions. That makes sense, because some people do skin picking and they're like it's visible, you know, and I do not have that. I think it, I don't know why it manifests, if it's a nervous thing.
I think it's a self-soothing thing too.
Yes, absolutely.
I can see that.
Maeve, is it like, do you pick to the point of blood at all?
Yeah. So that was going to say, yeah. For me, I go through waves of it being worse, but I really will like rip all the skin off my fingers, like around the nail bed, and it's like bloody. And the thing is, it gets really painful. So even though I can't stop doing it, then it, because it can be so sore, and also it does not look pretty. It looks bad.
Yes.
And I'm like, I've always been really embarrassed about it, but at the same, but that is not enough for to get me to stop doing it. I have tried everything for this, you know, mm-hmm. like every sort of nail, I mean, whatever shit that you put on your nails to stop biting them, and like it
persists.
Yeah.
Have a prediction.
Oh,
which is if and when you go more into your OCD therapy, and the more that starts to be in recovery, the less you're going to go after your fingers, because mm-hmm. it is a full-on soothing thing, right? Yes. Like for me, if I'm in a state of heightened anxiety, especially over a couple of days, or, you know, there's just something coming up that I'm worried about, then I will find myself pulling my hair more, mm-hmm. right? And truly, you also kind of hit the nail on the head for something else, which is the only way I can get myself to stop is vanity. So I make sure that I don't pluck from my hairline, because I already think I have a 5 head instead of a 4 head. I will pluck back further so that you can't see it. And I won't, like, it's very typical for trichotillomania to be in one specific spot on the head. Oh. So you end up with like bald spots and stuff like that. Or some people will pick out their eyebrows or their eyelashes. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm just too pretty, you know? So.
And Gabby, you do not have a 5 head.
No, you don't.
That's because I have bangs. Thank you.
I've seen you without bangs.
No, you haven't. Your bangs are cute though.
Yeah, they're
thank
very
you.
Cute.
I like them. Thank you. Good. Mm-hmm. This is a good place to end on, guys. Let's just keep the compliments coming towards you and my bangs.
You're beautiful, perfect.
It's just gorgeous. The bangs. Keep it to the bangs. Sorry. Maeve, don't bangs. Overstep. Please.
Oh my God.
I need it. I'm just trying to control your compliments. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, before we head out, because I know we've been talking for a while, like a long while, I just realized, but this has been a great conversation, by the way. I've been enjoying this thoroughly, but I really want to hear like the things that you're working on in your creative life, Maeve, you know, that you might want to like talk about, or, you know, allude to.
Absolutely. Yes.
Speak in metaphor about.
Yeah. Always working on a lot of things that will likely never see the light of day, but I am working on a documentary. It's actually one that I started when I was still in school. It was part of my senior thesis that I then abandoned when I graduated, but I am actually back at it. So I'm going to start filming again. And yeah, my goal is to finally get it finished. So
that's great.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Probably won't be done until like next year, but I do have a goal to really finish it. So that's my biggest project that I'm working on right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty freaking huge, especially since it like encompasses years and, you know, many life experiences in the meantime. Do you want to say like what it's about?
No. I was just going to say that because it's kind of it's relevant to what we were talking about, but it started the year after my mom died, and it was about, because I was a sociology major, so it had to have somewhat of a sociological lens, but it was about a sudden death and grief and how that impacts identity and families. And now, because I did a lot of filming then, and now it's obviously been a few years, which I hope will be good for the story, like look at what's happened over time. But it's looking more at like trauma, and how the trauma from that experience impacts those things. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Fascinating. Yeah. And I cannot wait for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too.
And I'm also, yeah, exactly. But seriously, as like an ADHD person, all the other acronym things, the fact that you're picking this back up again is so admirable. And I am jealous that you're doing it. Like, that's so freaking cool, dude.
Yeah, thank you. And it's one of those things that was giving me I was having a lot of shame over the fact that I had never finished this project, there are a lot of unfinished projects, but this one in particular, because of the subject, I think it was like, how can I not ever do anything with this? And, you know, I struggled at the time that when I was in school, because I had a professor and whatever, and I graduated, I finished the requirements of the class, but he was like, you must finish this. Like, I want to help you finish it. And I was like, I just can't. It was too much.
Yeah.
And he didn't understand it, but a lot of people just don't understand some projects. It's just, you can't do it at that moment. Like, it's taking too much emotional or whatever sort of energy. And I was not in the space to deal with it.
Yeah. But, I mean, having distance is really good for those things, you know, especially things that are really close to you, but need to be, you know, like made in whatever.
Right.
You know, to be shared.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you. Yay.
Are you doing any improv or anything these days?
I did take a class with Shannon, actually, in person.
Nice. It was
in person. Oh, yeah. But, right. She's in New York. And she was like, you have to come and do a class. I'm like, I can't. Sorry. I can't. I'm terrified. I was really so. I had only ever done improv on Zoom. So,
are you serious?
I'm serious. I was so terrified.
Dude, you're so good.
Oh, thank you.
That's amazing.
Thank you. I tried, but I did do it in person. I mean, it's kind of pricey to constantly do these classes, but every once in a while, I want to take an in person one so I can just stay fresh with it, because it is different, obviously, doing it in person. I did kind of enjoy doing it on Zoom. Like, there were some fun elements of it. A lot of people knock the Zoom improv, but there were some parts of it that were really fun, in my opinion.
Yeah. I agree. I think that you can like get into like the character more in like an emotional way. And in person, it's the interaction physically is very cool, but yeah, it's just different.
Yeah, it's very different.
As the kids say, it just hits different, I believe.
Yes. That is what the kids say.
Heather, have I been talking over you? Did you want to say something? No. Okay, great.
No, just you're in just my making head that up.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much, Maeve. This has been a phenomenal conversation. I don't know how short Heather's going to be able to make this pod. It might have to be a couple of episodes, but I would definitely want to have you come back.
Oh, because please. I would love that. This was really fun.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
It's been really fun and deep.
Yes, yeah. It's been. Yeah, yeah, actually,
and,
really.
And I would like.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I would really like to hear about your progression with ADHD and OCD therapy.
Yes.
You know, it'd be nice to hear where you land and how things are going.
Yeah, I'll have to come back for an update.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, cool. That sounds cool. I'm totally casual about it and playing hard to get. It's fine. So this is the end of the episode. Thank you so much, Maeve, for coming on here. Thank you, Heather, for being fantastic as always. Thank you, Gabby, for just... the voice of an angel.
Yeah. Thank you both. This is awesome.
Thank you, Maeve. Yeah, this is.
Yeah.
Mwah.
Mwah. Yeah, chef, perfect. Chef's kiss.
Yeah, chef's kiss.
Bye.
And don't forget to check out our show notes to learn more about Maeve 40 and other things that we discussed on the podcast.
Welcome to the end of the show. This is Gabby Blackman.
And this is Heather Nye.
Thank you for listening to Comically Exposed. We're just a little show with two creators who edit and produce each episode. We appreciate all your support.
If you like what you heard, please follow us on Instagram at comicallyexp.podcast. That's comicallyexp.podcast.
Oh, and check out our website at comicallyexposed.com. That's one word, comicallyexposed.com.
Where you can contact us by text or even leave a voice message.
Or subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes drop every other Wednesday.
Also, special thanks to Track Club and Goldenfinch for providing the music.
Thanks for listening. And hey, everybody, today is a great day to expose yourself. Okay, until next time.
In your face, Miriam.